Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
We're here at Menards Bank Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint. Batteries. Tools.
Toilet paper.
Extension cords. Grocery items.
Hardware for my cabinets.
Snack items. Crackers and some canned good stuff.
Shop vac supplies.
Toothpaste, cereal, coffee, dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome to the Ladies of Liverpool podcast.
Everything Liverpool.
Everything for ladies.
Ladies of Liverpool.
With Leanne Campbell.
Okay, the moment we've all been waiting for.
Weirdest.
This feels so weird. I'm so happy.
Like, okay, let the lady ask the question. Don't jump in too soon. I get very excited.
Well, that's fine. Like, you jump in wherever you like. But yes, so I was very pleased because we, you know, obviously been watching you recording the podcast and you're such a brilliant host. And you always have so much energy whenever you come into the office and we're always like, how does she do it? And, you know, it's always you that gets asked the questions of people. Mm-hmm. And we don't know that much about Leanne. Obviously, you've got a good social media following. Lots of people keeping up to date with your life.
We all know what you see on social media is a percentage of what goes on in real life. Sometimes I do think if someone followed me with a camera, I put those housewives of Cheshire to shame. You think there's drama there. It's like every single day there's something and none of it makes it to social media. So let's talk about it.
Ladies of Liverpool. Everything Liverpool.
Everything for ladies.
Let's start from the beginning.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know where the beginning even is because I know you've been in radio for over 22 years, but what came before that?
Okay. So the very beginning. Let me take you back to County Road. So, born in Bootle, raised in Walton. I was the shyest kid in the class. Like, painfully shy. Ridiculous. So, my mum was obviously getting a little bit worried because we're from a nice, lively family, you know. And
I can imagine.
She had Hayley, my sister, who was very much out there. Yeah. A lot to say. Very confident. She was winning, like, high jump championships for Liverpool, and she was very sporty and all that stuff. And there was just me, and the only way I can describe me is like a little Yorkshire pudding. I was just like this little pudding. My nickname was Chubby Odd Socks because I always just had one sock on. You know, I didn't know what was going on in my life. I was just pottering around watching my sister, who was the voice. I was just this quiet little thing. And then my friend Rebecca, her mum, Veron, she spoke to my mum when we started school and she was like, she's so quiet, isn't she? But she gets on really well with our Beck. Would she like to come to dance class with us? We go every Friday. She can come to ours for tea and we'll go. And off I went. I can remember the first day, Glitter Dance School. Mary Alford was in there now. She's got her own school still going, Mary Alford. Big shout out to all the kids who go there. But there I was, first day, and me and my friends were getting changed into our stuff. And isn't it? It's bonkers, the mad things that stick in your brain.
Yeah, thing you do remember.
This is one of the memories that really stick out. I think it's the first time I was ever terrified. And I stood on a pipe in this toilet while she got changed. And I must have been that chubby. The pipe broke and flooded everywhere, but we didn't tell anyone. So we went into dance. So by the time the dance class came out, everywhere was soaked through. I went home to my mum, confessed, sobbed my heart out. But my mum can't even remember this, but in my head it was huge. And I was like, I'm never going back. I did go back. And it was Mary Halford who spoke to my mum and said, after a couple of years, this kid's got something. I'm pulling it out of her, but she's just got something.
Chubby odd socks.
Little chubby odd socks had something. But she didn't know what to do with it. I was just happy in the back. And I'm still like that now. I am happy in the back, outside of work. If you see me in a club, I mean, unless I'm with a certain group, I'm dancing on tables abroad. If you've ever seen me in town in a bar, which is very rare because if I'm not working, I'm not out. I am quite happy in the corner. I just like my own little people and my own little space. So the whole social media thing, I really had to learn to do, because in a studio with a microphone, it's totally different. Putting yourself out there visually where everyone can have an opinion on everything you do and you say. That's changed over the years, because when I started in radio, you didn't get to hear everyone's opinion on everything. Where now, and I don't think as humans, we're supposed to hear everyone's thoughts. I don't think that's healthy.
No.
But that's what we deal with now. So from chubby odd socks in dance, who was the shyest girl in the class, to Leanne Campbell at 44, who's grown a thick skin and has learned how to navigate through every challenge that's come my way, and there's been plenty. I look at that now, and I saw something on Instagram the other day, and it said, look back to the little girl who's looking at you now thinking, wow, you're impressive. And I think of little chubby odd socks, she would never have dreamt that she would have done all the things that we've done through the years.
No, that's nice, isn't
it? And it's been a ball. Yeah, that's been a ball.
So how did you go from chubby odd socks, breaking pipes in the back of the dance class,
party,
to presenting radio shows and events? And
so I went to my mum, Mary Halford said to my mum, there's this place, Elliot Clark. It's on Rodney Street. It's a house. But they go to school for a couple of hours in the morning, then they go to Crane Building and they dance all day. And I think she would thrive there. I think she'd really love it. Cut to, my dad works on the oil rigs and would, you know, go on strike. And so we'd be out of work for a long time. And my mum, who I idolise my mum and dad for completely different reasons, but I am a mix of both of them. I'm somewhere in the middle. So, you know, my mum was always this really strong woman that allowed my dad to go and strike against, you know, Maggie Thatcher at the time and all. So I grew up with all of this. And it threads through that when my dad was fighting for health and safety and all that on the oil rigs, and Maggie was saying no and all that. Google if you don't know, I won't bore you with all the ins and outs. But I grew up educated on that, fully listening to what was being said at home. And there were men that my dad knew that were dying, going to work, leaving the family behind. And because of the lack of health and safety, they died, scouse men that we knew from being my dad's mates or whatever else. And I can remember like singing in social clubs, which is Ori's social club now on City Road. I remember being there as a little girl singing for this man's family. We were raising money to help his wife pay for the funeral and pay for it. So there's that side of me and my family as well. It became that singing and dancing became something I could bring into real life. We're raising money with it.
Communities together.
Yeah, and as much as I was shy and I didn't feel fully comfortable on a stage, my dad would say, this is the reason we're doing it. Do you want to do it? And something in me was like, yeah. So I think that's where I learned to push through. You know those moments where you go, I can't do it. And there's been so many of those where you have to have a word with yourself.
Yeah.
And you just say to yourself, no, you can. And what's the worst that can happen? Go for it. And I've done that so many times. And that leads me to radio, because I was never supposed to do radio. I didn't want to do it. Wasn't interested in it. Didn't like it. I did listen to Juice FM when I was driving to gigs to sing and stuff. But that job offer is bonkers. That's a good story if no one knows that one.
Go on. Tell us.
So I'd spent my teenage years playing. My 13th birthday was in the Playhouse playing Annie. Nice. The West End tour came.
Did you have a picture of you with the wig on?
Yes.
Amazing.
I had I had like scars on my head off the net that they glued to your head back in the day.
Dented
for the
in.
Wig. Yeah. So you pull it off and you'd have all these spots and then you'd squeeze them. So my 13th birthday was in the Playhouse of this fabulous cast up from London, living my absolute dream with the best group of girls as the Orphans. And we were just this team and it was great. And then I went on tour with Anthony Newley and I was getting these jobs and theatre was everything. And it just wasn't a question. That's all I wanted to do. So off I went into that world and I was performing at the Royal Court in Liverpool. And a guy stood waiting for me outside the stage door. But picture the scene. Pitch black. You're knackered. You've done three shows. You've got glitter stuck to your face. You just want to go home. And there's a lovely guy, posh as they come, Clive Dickens. And he says to me, I want you to do radio. I've bought a radio station and I'm so confused. that in Liverpool, with the heart that Liverpool's got, we don't have a strong female on it. And I want you to do it. Will you do it? I was like, I can't do it. I don't know how to do that. So he said, you can do it. You are it. Just come in and be you. But I'd never heard me on the radio.
Yeah.
Everyone sort of refined their accent, and if they had an accent, but it was mostly like Irish or Cockneys, or which looking back now, I'd never questioned.
Mm.
So cut to, no thank you, no thank you. He took me for dinner, he explained to me what radio is about and why he thought it would work.
Mm.
And again, I was just like, radio please, yeah. Yeah. I just don't know if I could do it. It filled me with fear. I was so scared of it. And I don't know whether this was chance or this guy was so clever. And he's known for being very clever. The things he's done in the industry is outrageous. But being completely unaware, I'm just treating him like he's a normal guy who's bought a barber shop. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm like, oh, he's bought a radio station. You must be able to just do that. So he goes, I said, no, thank you very much. He got someone to call me called Gronya. It turned out to be a very good friend. I adore her. Mm. She was running the station. She was program control at the time. And she said to me, hi, Leanne. Quick call, we've got a problem. Our traffic girl's off and we need someone to come in and do traffic and travel. It's short notice. Would you please save our skin?
Nice.
Now, if you knew me, you'd know that's how to get me.
Yeah.
But this man's met me once standing outside of a theatre and sat down once for an hour.
Mm.
I don't know whether he is that clever. I don't know whether I'm that open and that predictable. I don't know. But straight away, I jumped in my little stallion, the car was called at the time, and this little grey car with a choke that had 4-star petrol that cost me £300. I was like, yeah, I'll come in, I'll do my best, I'll see what I can do. Didn't ask how much, good job, I probably wouldn't have gone. Just went, okay, yeah, I'll help you out, I'll help. Go down, they gave me a laptop. Let's go back to, I went to a theatre school, we didn't have computers, we did ballet and tap and modern. So I sat in front of this laptop just like a rabbit in the headlights. And then I got called into the studio, which was like a little box on stilts in the old Concert Square studio, which is my favourite place when I think of radio. That's my heart and soul. And so I walked up those steps to the little box on stilts and I thought, I'm going to fuck this. Good style. This is going to be one of these things where people go, this is going to be in the Echo. Who the hell put this on the radio?
Who thought this was a good idea?
I just thought this is going to be hell for me now, but I said I'll do it. So they put the mic in front of me and I just spoke what I knew. I knew Scotty would be chocker, I knew Upper Parley would be chocker, and this is what I said. I went, it's chocker on Scotty, it's chocker on Upper Parley, blah 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 blah. And then the jock at the time, Simon Green, and again become great friends, but I've got such a brilliant family of people I've worked with. And he's, again, lovely, lovely guy. The first guy I really worked with, because they put me with him first. And he just went, I don't think we'll be seeing you again. And I went, no, mate, don't think so. Shall I just, like, go and get me coat? And he went, go and sit back outside. And traffic's every half an hour. So I thought, I'll know within the next 15 minutes if they want me to do the next one, but probably not. So then he comes out and he goes into this room to Gronya, big glass window, and she jumps out of her seat and she runs in the studio. And then they both come down and they go, would you like to come and look at the tech system? Didn't know what they were talking about.
Yeah.
Go in and this screen is filled with messages going, who is Scouse? Put Scouse back on. Tell us more about Scouse.
That's amazing.
So Clive, again, being the genius that he is, predicted it. He knew exactly what people would want. And bear in mind, I was told many times after this from different radio stations or different people within the industry, women don't want to hear other women on the radio. They want to hear a man with a smooth accent, whether it's a southern accent or an Irish accent or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
Women don't, who these women are that they're speaking to, I don't know, because I think we've proven
sample of women
that wrong. Well. Yes. And also men don't want to hear women who get the punchline in. They don't want that. They want someone who laughs.
It sounds like we're talking about 100 years ago.
This is 22 years ago.
That's mad.
But not much changed over the years. It was a battle. It really was a battle.
Yeah.
More so within the industry, not for Liverpool. Liverpool being what it is, Liverpool loves the difference. They love people who are different. They like to hear something in Liverpool that they can't hear anywhere else.
Liverpool, not England, aren't we?
And I've got to say, the women in particular embraced me and made me feel like I could do that job. And it was through that tech system. And I'd be scared to look at it because I think, oh, you know, will someone say something mean or something horrible? And it was the women. And then over the years, we've heard this women empowering women. And I sit there and I see it on TV or wherever you're reading it. And I think I know that firsthand. I felt that way back before it was a statement, before we were all doing Independent Women's Day and International Women's Day. Before all of that, I lived this because I wouldn't have done the job I do without the women of Liverpool going, we love her. She's one of us. She's rough around the edges and that's what we like.
That's brilliant then, isn't it? The full circle, ladies of Liverpool.
And now here we are.
The ultimate lady of Liverpool.
Well, I still try.
But that's brilliant. What a lovely way to start the journey, though. You know what I mean? To have a little go at something that you have no idea is going to work or not and get such a positive response. And then you know that there's something in there that you can just explore. Because I think that's when you said before about things that you think you can't do, but you do anyway. Mm-hmm. You don't know, do you, until you try.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a big thing in life. You know, no one else is going to do anything for you.
Yeah.
You have to make things happen. And the only way to do that is just to try
just
and do it.
I say to our Annabelle all the time, don't think it's like the films. Do you know where you watch it on the film? They go, I can't do this, can't do this. And then they just magically do it.
Yeah.
More often than not, I've done something I thought I couldn't do and I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it to the level you're supposed to be able to do it. And I've walked away most times going, oh shit, that was awful. I'm not as good as everyone else. You know, it's not like it is on TV. It's not like you see when I watch podcast clips on Instagram and I think everyone can relate to this. And it's like, you can do it. You go out there and you can do it. And once you do it, you're going to earn £1 million.
Yeah.
And I go to Annabelle, fake news, totally fake. You'll do it. You'll be diabolical until you learn how to do it.
You keep doing it. You keep trying.
You keep doing it and you keep trying to get better and you learn from everyone around you. And that's what I did.
Yes.
I soaked up everybody else. Everybody I've worked with has been totally different to me.
Yep.
And I think it's just finding each other's strengths and weaknesses and being okay with letting somebody else shine. I can't bear that when you listen to something like on the radio or even on TV and you can tell who's written it and who's produced it. And you go, because you're not giving anyone else any space. I watch a show and someone will be doing something wonderful on stage and there'll be someone trying to upstage them, doing actions. Let this person have the moment.
Yeah.
It makes you look better. It helps everybody shine.
Mm.
And in radio, that's so important. So if anyone's listening to this because they found it because they're thinking they want to get into radio, I think that the tip would be soak up everything you can from everyone else and be willing to learn every single day. Every day you learn. I still learn after 22 years.
I think that's huge.
Every show, I learn something new.
Yeah. I mean, that's that humility as well, isn't it? Like being open and willing to learn.
Yeah.
And it does come from everywhere, doesn't it? And the good and the bad.
Yes.
I don't want to do that or I don't want to do that again. And, you know, the mistakes you make
are
probably where you learn the most,
aren't they? You've got to make them. That's life. You've got to feel rubbish sometimes because that's the only way you get better.
So that was the start.
Yes.
From the tech screen and Juice FM.
Yeah.
So how did that develop?
So we got to do loads of stuff. Back then, we could sit in a room. We got in at 4 o'clock in the morning and I wasn't even onto Google at this point. It was papers. We went in. The papers got delivered early to us in the morning. So you knew your paper guy. You knew the cleaners they were in. We were just this big family.
Nice.
And we'd sit with the papers and we'd rip out the things that we thought we'd like to talk about or we thought the audience would be listening to and interested in. And then it came to competitions and we could turn to Clive at any given moment and say, hey, we've done a little bit of research and our listeners want like a boob job. Can we give away a boob job? And you go, yep, give me a price. And we'd be like...
That freedom worked though, didn't it?
Yeah.
Because you're able to really explore your personalities and what people liked.
And our boss wasn't scared of paying fines.
Right.
Which is quite important.
That is good, isn't it?
So we got a few of those and he just it was like a marketing budget to him. So
what were the fines for?
He thought,
what did you do?
Loads of stuff. So he said things. He said to me one time, Leon, come in the office. What's a word in Liverpool that classes a naughty word but wouldn't offend people? So I said, dickhead. He went, I think I said dickhead or knobhead.
My head went
like
to knobhead.
Yeah. And he went, great. A couple of days later, we're in the middle of a show. The ad break kicks in. Don't be a knobhead. Don't drink and drive. And I was like, he funded these habits and he'd gone, don't be annoyed. And of course, that makes the press. Yeah. And, you know, it would, I think, in any other city, generate loads of complaints. Yeah. I'm not convinced
we Liverpool got any complaints was that. Probably cheering that, wasn't it?
I think someone listening outside of Liverpool might have complained, but
yeah.
We got away with murder because the listeners were our mates. They weren't going to grass on us. They weren't going to snitch on us. We didn't get complaints unless it was from the authorities. Unless it was from like Ofcam or something.
A proper telling off.
Like the boob thing. I think that might have been an issue. You know, asking people to run to the beach and dig up, you know, New Brighton Beach. We had metal detectors and we buried a couple of grand and we were like, get stuck in. And people were just with the kids. The kids just didn't go to school that day because the mums were digging on the beach. And we're just on the most. We had an old woman who was an actor. And we set her up in Lime Street to give away money. So her story was she was just going around to the public in Lime Street saying, my husband's died and he wanted me to give away this money. And she was giving away fivers to everyone she saw. So then, of course, the news teams and TV come down and we're all sitting in the studio ringing the team with this old woman going, oh, no, this is escalating. Oh, no. Is this fraud? What's going to happen with this? What's going to But I don't know. If we got fines, we never knew. Clive just boxed it all off and gave us free reign.
It sounds like if Juice FM was its own social media channel, all that stuff would still do really well.
It'd just go viral, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That as a YouTube channel alone. Juice FM, the YouTube channel. Maybe do that. There
you go.
Yeah.
Brilliant. I mean, there's so many brilliant moments there, aren't there?
Yeah.
Landmark moments as well for the city, as well as, you know, you personally.
Yeah.
But obviously you've got your personal life as well going on alongside that.
Yes.
And lots of people like to talk about your husband, it seems.
Yeah, they do.
The gangster.
Yeah, yeah. So Gemma Ray,
yeah.
Who came in to do my cover, it's when she came in, she said to him, I was a bit nervous about meeting you, but you're not what I expected. I was like, what did you expect? You know, I just thought you'd be like a gangster's mog, you know, because you fell as a gangster. Oh, great. Tell me more about Jay. Jay is the fairest thing from that. He's the most chill, straight down the line. I met him. He was working behind the bar in a sports centre.
Yeah.
I was singing in pubs and clubs. That's how we met. We became instantly the best of mates. We were just soulmates. We were kids. We were absolute kids. And we celebrated all our birthday milestones together. And we've just always been a fit. Kids come along, things get tough. I'm not going to deny that. There are moments when you do question, you're like, are we growing apart? Because he's dad and I'm mum and what's going on and all that. But above all else, we really have worked on us and we are so solid. And I think as the years go on, if you can get through those times that are hard, whether it's, you know, losing your job and being out of work and you've got someone who's just your rock, you can't ever let that go. Mm. I feel so lucky to have him. And we heard in the podcast with the psychic, remember she was like, everybody loves Jay. And she summed it up. I was like, everybody does. My mum used to say to me when we were younger, if you ever split up with them, I can still like be his mother-in-law, can't I? I'm like, no, you can't. That's weird. Oh, if you got rid of him, I couldn't get rid of him. He's like my son. I'm like, oh God, everyone loves him. He's just a gorgeous lad. He's just, there's no sides to him. He's just dead genuine. And I do count myself really lucky in this industry I'm in. For any man, it's got to be so hard because we go out and I'm not in any way saying I'm a celebrity. I'm not. People just know me. They've grown up with me. We've, you know, gone through COVID together. We've gone through our babies together. We've got married together. There are people who've listened to me for the 22 years and we know each other. And there's loads of people I've never met before until it's Jay's birthday dinner and we're having steak and chips and someone will come over and sit with us. And then go, can I buy you a drink? And can we sit down? Can I tell you this time? And do you remember you said this, you know, 20 years ago? And do you remember this? And do you remember that? And they'll just want to say all this stuff because in their heads, we know each other. And I love that. I love that part of the job. But for Jay, I'm like, you're all right. You're all right, babe. And he's like,
stamming his beer.
He's like, let's not go. Let's go away for a weekend. Let's go and sit in Milan where we can get a flight for 20 quid, go out for a cheap pasta and a bevy. And I've got you to myself. And that, I think, is that and my mum and dad is what's kept our marriage going, I think.
Nice.
Without my mum and dad. Because she'll pick up on things when things get stressful or something's happened and she'll be like, right, you two, off you go. And she said, hey, mum's done the same thing. Go out tonight. You can get yourself ready. I'll have the kids. And she'll take the kids and we'll then be like, okay, I remember you.
Yeah.
You're great. We love each other. It's great. And I'm dead lucky with that. With
my mum and dad. That is important. Mm. Yeah. And that is, because, you know, Because obviously, yeah, social media, we see Leanne Campbell in a always happy and positive and on it. And then obviously you're in the podcast studio and you're still like that. You like it all the time. And I have no idea how you do it. Because, you know, even like just me doing my job, I go home and I can't speak to anyone for like an hour and then I can talk to people again.
Yeah.
What do you do? How do you manage that? Because
I don't know, you know.
You've got so much going on.
Yeah, I think when it comes to me as a human being, it's how I function. And I do laugh sometimes and say one day the wheels might just fall off and everyone's going to get told what I actually think of them. But I, at the moment, I'm still trucking on at 44. Mm. I think it's the audition process. It's theatre, doctor theatre. You couldn't be sick. You couldn't be sad. You couldn't have a down day because you put that costume on. And even as a 10-year-old, you put that costume and you go out and you sing that song because there's 1,000 people in the audience and this is a business. Mm. So I've always been really disciplined and trained in that way. Plus, I come from a family where nobody else does what I do. So I'm so grateful. It's not like I haven't got a dad who done it or a mum who done it. I didn't have an in. I didn't have a family background where it was like, this is such a one's daughter. My dad's a lagger. My mum worked on the district. She's more of a legend than me. So my mum went round looking out for families. So she ended up running children's centres. But before that, she was a social worker / health visitor. You know, she was in people's homes.
Yeah.
And I remember being out and about at 16 and a woman coming up to me. And this happens often. This woman coming up to me, but it was the first time after about 16 I was out, not drinking, honestly. I was in Concert Square, ironically.
We can put like honest subtitles underneath.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. You know, this is for theatre only. This is not real. So I'm Bevy's in Concert Square. I'm 16. And this woman come over to me and you're drunk and you're happy and you're 16. You're a bit of a divvy. And this woman came up to me. She held me arm, stopped my arms, and she cried to me about me mum. And she was like, me partner was abusive. He'd gone. I was on my own with these three kids and one was a brand new baby. And your mum came round and she cancelled a whole day. She spent the whole day with me. She insisted I had a bath. She looked after the kids. When I was ready, I had a sleep. Your mum then, when it was safe to, went and knocked back on my door an hour later with shopping bags. She filled me cupboards. And I think health visitors aren't on a great wage. Mm. You know, she's got three kids of her own at home. That's my mum. And that's where I go. My mum will find a silver lining in anything. And my dad. You know, my dad could have been on strike and he was always sure as anything they were going to win. And often they did. Mm. You know, that's the mentality I grew up with. Even if you fail, give it everything you've got and look for the positives. Always look for the silver lining because it's there if you look hard enough. It's there. Mm.
It's really important. It's obviously easier said than done, isn't it? But, you know, solutions, not problems. Find the positives.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, obviously when we... with keep calling her Mystic Meg, but obviously that's not her name.
Carol, was it?
Yeah, Carol McGee.
Yes.
When we were with Carol McGee, when you were with Carol McGee in episode one, and she obviously talked about, you know, you've had loss in the family as well with people close to you and things like that. You know, you've obviously been through really difficult times.
And that makes always the best been positive job in the world. The worst job in the world. Yeah. It's those moments. Mm. It's those moments where you think, I wish I had a desk job. So I could sit in a corner somewhere and just not speak to anyone and hide. Yeah. There were moments where, like, doing radio, going way back, my mum. And it's that, you say it out loud, and if you don't know me, you might think, oh, you've got to be a cold person to do this. But this is how I was brought up. If my mum thought for 1 minute I didn't try my hardest at something or I gave up at something, it's the worst thing. That and not having my lippy on. If she sees me without my lippy on, she's instantly like, oh, you're sick. What's wrong with you? You know, she's always look your best and do your best. And that's, you've got no regrets then. Mm. And she was in hospital. She's had, and this is a great story because she lived to the end, which many people around her didn't. Younger, healthier people didn't. She had gallstones that went undiagnosed. She kept going to the GP and she was saying, I never come to the doctors. But I keep getting these pains. And she'd take herself upstairs and she couldn't move. Like she was in labour times 10. And she'd hide herself away. Again, that's my mum. Didn't want us kids worrying. My dad's working away. This one day, after being told it wasn't gallstones, she didn't need anything. It was the change. She was actually told, go and get this book out the library for the change. 2 days after that, she collapsed in work. Someone brought her home because she wouldn't go to the hospital. I was randomly walking around the corner to my mum's. I'd just bought my first house with Jay. And weirdly, again, I think this is a witchiness that me and my mum have. I thought I'll walk to my mum's. No one was in. There was no one there. I was walking to my mum's to sit in my mum's on my own. Why? And I believe it was because I needed to be there in that moment. She was curled up on this couch with a woman I've never met before who was on a course with her, who brought her home. And my mum was saying, don't phone an ambulance. And in that moment, I had to phone an ambulance. I had to phone my dad, who was working away. And we got my mum to hospital. And we were told it wasn't likely she was going to be okay. These gallstones had gone into her pancreas, flooded her lungs with poison. And this poison was coming out of everywhere. And everything was shutting down. All her organs were shut down.
I didn't realise that could happen.
Mm-hmm. No, lots of people don't know about it. So that's why I always say to anyone, at the first sign of a pain, just be sure. Just be sure. So we're in hospital. There's a couple of moments where she's in POCO, they call it, post-operative critical care. Yeah. And the only way they could get to, and we're lucky in Liverpool because this Greek surgeon comes to Liverpool once a week to do this surgery. So it must be pretty common. They can't cut you open because you die. So they go through your back, they create these two holes in your back, and they flush out this poison this way. But every time they do it, the stress on your organs, you can crash. It's life or death. You know, it was really tough. I remember one of the nurses who I pick up mates throughout my life, and Michelle's a good friend of the family now, and I'll never forget Michelle saying to me, "Your family are too polite. You're going to have to fight, otherwise your mum's going to die. She needs this treatment. She needs it today. I'm going to go to the nurse's station. You need to come to me and do whatever you need to do." And so there I am, completely done. Think this is the end for me, mum. And I've got to pull it from somewhere to go and say to Michelle, whatever I think Michelle needs me to say to make this happen. And just as I do, my dad swings his double torso open. And I can only describe him as like an ape. His arms seemed really long. And his arms were swinging. And he just lost his shit. And as he did, Michelle's on the phone and she's going, whoever was on the end of this phone, letting them know. And the next minute, my mum was wheeled out behind us. And we were sat in the, I think it's a subway, facing the Royal Hospital, thinking, is that the last time we're going to see my mum? Is she going to make it through? And have we just sent her to an operation that, you know, could finish her off? So she kept getting this flushing, and I'd sit around the bed and the nurses would be brilliant and they'd let me stay with her. And in that instance, although it's the worst job in the world to have it, it's also the best because it gives you that moment of you just come out your body and you come away from everything. And that's happened a couple of times. Yeah. As the psych said, there's quite a few people.
Yeah.
My best friend, Suzanne, if you follow me on socials, breast cancer really young, 40 for a couple of years and then just became too much. And I remember getting that call on air. She was at home when she passed. And I remember her mum just sent me this text and we were mid-show. And that moment of, this, I've got to go, I've got to go. And I had the next day off.
You read it on air? To yourself on air?
Yeah, I read it in between two links. And you're working with someone, I was working with Scott at the time. I remember looking at Scott and going, I would never let you down, you know, I would never let you down. Oh, God. And he was like, go, just go. Well, you're like thick as thieves on it. Oh, God.
I'm sorry.
But yeah, you have this bond and you lean on each other in so many different times.
Yeah.
I remember she was at a house party in ours and she brought, her job was to bring crisp. And me and Dave.
Bring crisps.
This is me and Dave used to fight over crisps and crisp.
Okay.
And so he brought crisps and I'd be like, why are you putting an S on? He's like, because that's what everyone does.
So you say crisp?
Crisp. So I'd be like, you bring the crisp then, big bollocks. So we were laughing about it. And he brought crap crisp. And Suzanne brought good crisp. And she brought these belters, like you know, fluffy crisp, like Spanish crisp, like wheels. Not only rings, but...
I know what you mean. Like is it like a maize? Are they made like...
I think that's the way I'm looking
I know
for.
What you mean, like a softer wheels of crisp.
Yes.
Crisp.
Yeah.
So why do you say crisp but not crisps?
I think it's just, is it like a North Scouse thing or is it just a Leanne thing?
I don't know. I think you'll probably have to ask people that because I've never heard it. Unless you're saying a crisp.
No, I'm talking about the whole bag, yeah. A packet of crisp.
Well, maybe I'll learn something new now.
Is this the first controversial thing we've had on the episode?
Oh, well, I don't know. Do you want to have more?
Go on.
Do you have any other... I mean, we'll start... Who's the best person you've ever interviewed?
Some of them are mega famous and some of them aren't. Take that straight away. Right. The nicest. And I think it's because I interviewed them the same week as I interviewed an up-and-coming band that, let's be honest, we haven't heard much of since, right, who were so up their own arses, it was unbelievable. They fully believed their own hype, and it was a hard, really hard interview to do, because they were full of it, and you're just like, and I can get on with anyone, so if I don't get on with you, I'm like, oh yeah, something's amiss here. Yeah. But they believed their own hype, and it was short-lived, but we interviewed them. And the next day I was going to interview, take that. And I thought, oh God, if that's what they were like, imagine what these are going to be like. The most gorgeous fellas on the planet. Unaffected, completely unaffected. You wouldn't believe for a minute they were as successful as they are. We just sat around this little table, we're all chinwagging. At the end of it, I'd said during the interview that me and my mate had got tickets to go and see them in Manchester the last time they toured. And we got our tickets in Barnes Travel, if you remember that, from County Road. And we waited for a bus and we got a bus to Manchester, but we took all our own drink. We're only young and silly. We got so drunk. Yeah, we got so drunk. And then when we got there, they said, you can't bring it in. So we drank it outside. So we can't remember much of what happened. So I remember us getting the scores out because we were standing on those flippy seats. Oh, yeah. It was in like a football ground or a cricket ground. Couldn't tell you. No idea. Very vague memory of it. And I'm telling Jason Orange this story. And said, I stood on the seat and I fell down the back of the seat. And then my mate fell over trying to help me out. And then we got escorted out. And I believe Lulu turned up and we never got to see Relight My Fire. So we're laughing about it. Yeah. He phoned my mobile phone. So he got my number from the station, or his people did. Mm. But he phoned my mobile phone, left a message. He's like, all right, Leanne, I got tickets here for you. Have them, just make a donation to this charity. Have a great night. You and your mates have a great night. Don't get pissed. I want you to remember Sean. And I'm like, oh my God, this is actual Jason Orange. Never hears of him since. Lovely guy. Mm. That to me says a lot about a person.
Yeah.
What celebrity do you know would go out the way like that?
I know. And a great accent that you just did as well.
Thanks very much.
We're really good, yeah.
The accent was like going on. But he was just the best guy, but they were fabulous.
Yeah.
They were just gorgeous. Absolutely love them. Talisa.
Oh yeah.
Again, I interviewed Talisa and Cheryl Cole in the same day.
Yeah.
And Talisa had just taken over from Cheryl on X Factor or something like that, one of those.
Yeah.
And she came in, she went, hey, can I have a moment with you? Did Cheryl say anything about me? Was she all right about me taking the job? And I was like, you gorgeous open book woman. I absolutely love you. She had these little chihuahuas running all around the place. She had her best friends as a PA. And she was just the most down to earth, gorgeous girl. Yeah. I'd interviewed her when she was with N-Dubs before.
N-Dubs? Remember N-Dubs?
Yeah, and they were lovely then. They were really lovely.
Yeah.
They went all together with it. I'm not sure what was going on that day.
Were they having fun?
I was 8 months pregnant at the time with Joseph. We were in the studio on stilts in Giuseppe. Nice. And they came in and I'd done an hour interview with them. And at the end, they went, is she pregnant? And that tells you everything, you know. They were obviously sidetracked, not fully in the moment. Don't know, tired, maybe tired.
Yeah.
But they were lovely then. And it was lovely to see her all those years later. So successful, solo career, primetime TV in every newspaper. And she was the same girl. She was adorable. Loved her.
Well, that's
Alan Carr, love interviewing him. Gorgeous
Alan
guy.
Carr, sorry, I was thinking about Cheryl Cole. Did she say anything about Talisa?
No, nothing at all. But she wasn't as forthcoming. She was very media trained. And I think with Cheryl Cole, she'd probably been through a lot at that moment.
Yeah.
The breakdown of her marriage and all that kind of stuff. So she was quite guarded.
Mm.
And I respect that.
Sound.
I do respect that. I think once you've been burnt by the press, it's safe to just
be safe.
Give nobody
an
inch. Mm. But she warmed up towards the end. They always do.
Sure.
Nicole Scherzinger started off very guarded.
Nicole Scherzinger?
And then I ended up...
Oh, what a list.
I aeroplaned it on YouTube. All this stuff's on YouTube. I aeroplaned it with my feet. And so it was all quite quiet and not much was happening with this interview. And I was like, Scott Hughes was in another room. Mine's an Annabelle. Annabelle wasn't even one. She was just laying to crawl. And I was like, Scott, lock yourself in this room. Here's some quavers. Give her them. And so I had all this going on in the background. Yep. And I'm interviewing Nicole. And in the end, I was like, oh, we need to liven this up. Can I fly in Weenie yet? And she went, I think she didn't understand what it was. So I lay on my back and she went, put your belly on my feet and just bench pressed her. She loved it. And then the interview took a totally different turn.
That's mad.
She's adorable. She was lovely, yeah.
Yeah, so help break down that barrier.
Yeah, but knowing the press as we know the press.
Yeah.
I think sometimes they think of radio presenters as, and we've heard it, haven't we? Mm. I hear it. I hear clips. I see things, even on podcasts. And you see somebody hosting a podcast and they're in it to get a quick little viral video, yeah, and they want a shock and they don't care if they're being disrespectful or they're overstepping the line, and they know what they're saying is leading that person to say something that's going to get them hits. I'm not about that. Can't be arsed with that. There's not enough money in the world for that.
Yeah. Well, that's good, and that's only what we expect from you, isn't it?
Yes.
So Alan Carr.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because I mean, he does seem very warm and obviously hilarious and just...
Me and Alan in the Hilton. I watch him and Amanda Holden doing that the holiday thing and think, that should have been me.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
We'd be fabulous.
Maybe you could...
I tried to get Pete Price to do it with me. Before that was on, I said to Pete Price years ago, because I'm a bit obsessed with Italy, listen, I've seen these £1 houses. Let's go 50 pence each, me and you. We'll get someone to video us and we'll do up one of these houses.
Yeah.
His words were, fuck off. You'll have mirrored wardrobes in every room. I wouldn't let you do up my house. And I was like, I did have a mirrored cabinet at the time. Right. But I was like, are you sure? That'd be gorgeous. But we didn't do it in the end. And I think if you message Pete Price, ask him, do you regret not buying that £1 house with her, with Leanne? Because we would have done it first and we'd have been the best.
But there's still time.
There is. There's life left in them yet.
Yeah.
I might just do it on my own. But then I read horror stories about the mayor sells off these houses because the villagers are, you know, lacking in humans.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you've done it up, you've spent a fortune on it, and then some like cousin's cousin lays claim to it and you have to give it back. It's in the small print.
Yeah, that's a bit scary, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the problem, isn't it? It's far away, and if we don't speak the language, we just feel a bit...
Yeah. It's bad enough buying a house in this country, isn't it? Never mind abroad.
Yeah, it's just bad buying a house, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. True, yeah. Especially now, definitely. But I would love to do that. That is the dream.
I was going to say, yeah, because obviously you are a Liverpool legend. So if you weren't...
in my own living room.
If you weren't in Liverpool... Where would you be? Where'd you want to?
Yeah, totally Italy.
Italy?
Yeah, totally Italy. I can't imagine.
Run a B&B.
Yes, that is it. That is it. Yeah. So if you look on Instagram, not only you lot will know. So it'll be interesting to see how many people are listening to the podcast. Go on Instagram and search Italian Scouse House. There's nothing on it. There's no pictures. But that's me manifesting my head off. Put it in the universe. Yeah. That one day, when the kids finish school, I can sell my house. I can leave them safely here with something and we can buy a rundown farmhouse and we can invite anyone who follows me on Instagram. You can, as long as you help and pay towards the lecky and you buy a few croissants, we're good. You can come.
Yeah, that'd be lovely.
Yeah, I'd love it. I'd be like an open door, be like, come on, come say hello. Help me paint this house because it's a dump.
Imagine that little village that you descend on.
Just full of Scousers.
Yeah.
Oh, do you, so I got a flight for £20 to go to Reggio Calabria. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
Nobody has. Nobody goes. And I read an article and I said on air last year, I'm going to book these flights for me and Jay. It's dead cheap. The four of us, £20 each a flight, our Airbnb was coppers. Mm. I think we did the whole thing for the week for £300.
Oh, brilliant.
Something ridiculous for a family of four. So obviously I go on it and I'm like, everyone do it. And then people are messaging going, it's run by the mafia. No English people go there. They're going to hate you. It's going to be horrendous. And I'm like, no, I'm not English. I'm Scouse. They're going to love me.
Yeah.
I'll get on with them. It'll be great. We had a ball. We loved it. I even looked into buying a little place there that was cheap, like a little apartment. Yeah. But we went to look at it and there was cats in the alley and I was a bit like, oh no, this is...
It was wrong with cats in the alley.
Rough. They were all just given birth. So, right. Like where you'd think of mice, it was cats. There was millions of them. Well, I couldn't be doing with that overnight. Imagine them crying overnight.
Yeah.
So, I'll leave it to the Italians.
But you're all right with the mafia?
Oh, love the mafia. I'd befriend the mafia, no problem. We'd have a ball. It'd never be a dull moment. The cats were the problem, not the mafia.
Fine. So not that Italian location, maybe another one.
Yeah, we'll stick to Lake Como when I'm in the lottery.
Okay.
But there is a little place, Argino, I've got my eye on. Very quiet. Mm. House prices are a bit cheaper. If I could just win a small amount on the lottery, I'd be good to go. It'd be me, Jay, Argino, kids can come and stay with us as often as they like. I say this, but my mum goes, so why have you not moved? And I go, because I can't move from my family. She's saying, so when the kids are of what age are you going to go? I'm like, well, when they've got their own kids. She's like, Jesus, Leanne, you're going to be 90.
That's the thing, isn't it? That is the reality.
Yeah.
And it's good and bad, isn't it?
It's a pipe dream.
Yeah.
And I'm all right with it not happening, but I'll just have to have more holidays, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's what you circle back to, isn't it?
Yeah. I did this one with the lottery on. I just think, if I could just get that, I'd show everyone how you spend the lottery. I'd be such a good lottery winner.
Go on then. Straight away,
everyone's mortgages done.
Everyone in your family?
Family, friends, friends, mums and dads.
Yeah.
You know, we've got families and friends, mums and dads who are late 60s still working because they've still got a mortgage because that's the country we live in. Everyone who I think would do it for me, I'd do it for them.
Nice.
Mortgage. So I wouldn't be left with much. I probably have about 200 grand to buy my little Italian scouts house. And so I'd do that.
Mortgage is an Italian house.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's nice.
Just take the pressure off everyone.
How much can you say about the people that you've experienced over the years who, or maybe it's just things that have gone wrong. Maybe that's a safer place.
Okay.
Yeah. You
things
know, so like,
that have gone wrong.
Or things that have happened that were unexpected and, you know, you've had to like deal with live on air and.
Oh, okay.
More of the madness behind the scenes that maybe people don't see.
Yeah. Okay. I think from the outside looking in.
Yeah.
Because people go, oh, I love your job. And it is. It's great. I've been dead lucky. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
There are those moments where you do have to really in your living and you're in a realm that you don't understand, that you're dealing with yourself. First thing comes to mind is the Manchester bombing. So my niece, my sister's little girl was in it and my sister-in-law. And so when you're dealing with stuff that's in the news, but you're actually living and breathing it, it can be quite raw to then not go to sleep, make sure they're home. You're dealing with all the, we can't find them, where are we? My sister's parked up in the road in Manchester. I was in the arena watching Take That, came out the car, it all goes bonkers. I'm like, right, I need to get to Manchester. You can't get near it, Leanne, you won't be able to get to me. My niece was in her teens at the time, say with my sister-in-law, and we're just hoping what you're seeing unfolds is not going to affect our family. That's the nicest possible way. We were in bits, everything had gone to pot, and you've got all that, you don't sleep, and you go into work and you have to be radio, Leanne. And the same goes on social media. You know, it's great when you see someone and they just go, this is what's happened and this is what's happened. It's not that easy. You can't do that. You do have to toe a line. It's my job. You know, you can't rant and rave and say all the opinions you want. You've got to give a bit of an insight into where you stand with something without getting too opinionated. Yeah. And without getting too emotional. You know, I think there's been so many things that have happened.
Well, I guess now we're coming towards the present day, aren't we?
Yeah.
You've got your social media following that's growing and you feel like you've got a positive relationship with people on social media and things like that.
Oh, it's been lovely. The podcasts each season we did with this just got more and more popular. The day Carol Vorderman messaged me and was like, I love this. I feel like a scout. I was born in Liverpool. I'm Wales. I was over the road from you. Kind of come on, and I'm in my house in lockdown. Like, I've got Carol Vorderman on the phone. I've got Carol Vorderman's phone number. Just so many moments like that have happened.
You are lovely and authentic, and you are so good at what you do as well.
Honest,
and that's
too
important,
honest.
Isn't it?
I think I'm too honest sometimes.
But you know, it's letting people in, isn't it? That's how you build the connections with people.
Yeah.
Who you know, you might not know.
Yeah.
In real life, but
yeah, I just want to keep doing what I'm doing, making the kids proud. New chapter, new challenges. Who knows? I don't know. But when I do, I'll let you know.
Ladies of Liverpool.
Thanks to Awesome Offers, our sponsors for today. Check them out, awesomeoffers.co.uk. See you soon.
Thanks for listening.
Subscribe now
via the iTunes Store.
Hear more from the Ladies of Liverpool
via ladiesofliverpool.com.
My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next.
I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
En Cox, estamos un paso adelante. Como el muchacho que ya sabe la orden de tu cafecito incluso antes de pedirlo.
Hey, José, café con leche sin lactosa, un toque de vainilla, templadito sin azúcar.
En Cox también nos adelantamos a lo que necesitas. Por eso el precio de tu plan no subirá por 3 años. Y nuestra seguridad avanzada protegerá tu red de amenazas antes de que pasen. Cox, un paso adelante. José, llamada de tu jefe en 3, 2, 1. Al menos 500 megabits por segundo de velocidad y Cox Unlimited Mobile. Impuestos y cargos no incluidos en garantía de precio. Velocidad de datos móviles reducida tras usar 20 gigas al mes.